Good morning. I'm Mark Allen with Gabor.io, and I'm here today with Josh Carter, director at the Washington Maritime Blue, and he's also a principal at 1859 Ventures. So, Josh, you're a busy man, right?
I keep myself busy. Absolutely. I got to keep myself out of trouble. That's what it is.
Yeah, I understand. So to start with, can you just share a brief description of your background and what you were doing before you joined these two companies?
Yeah, you know, I'm a serial entrepreneur. I've started a few companies. Some were great, some were not so great. And I think, you know, just like every failure, you learn more from those. I went and took all of that amazing experience that I had over the years, whether it was in telecom or startups or my own startups, and started running accelerators. So I was the interim CEO at Patriot Bootcamp, which is this ancillary nonprofit for Techstars. They're now part of DAV. But I ran that organization and oversee all of our programs. And then WeWork Labs here in Portland, Oregon called, and I started running that program, which is more of a perpetual accelerator program, rolling in missions. It's not time-based. We accept companies as they come in. And then WeWork decided to implode, and we can talk about that if you like. And then Maritime Blue came and called and asked if I would run all of their internal programs. So that's what I do now. I oversee all of our entrepreneurial programs, which include our accelerator, our Tacoma incubator. We have a new international program called the One Ocean Innovation Accelerator, and then a Seattle incubator that we're launching this year as well. So by the end of the year, we started with two programs. We'll have four programs by the end of the year.
Wow. So very, very interesting. So tell us a little bit more about Maritime Blue. I mean, you touched on it, but it sounds like it's a pretty vast organization. Is that safe to say?
Oh yeah, totally safe to say. And it depends on, you know, where in the whole realm you land within Maritime Blue. We have joint innovation projects. We have workforce development. We even have a project to help mitigate the noise that's created by the traffic in the Puget Sound called Quiet Sound, and to help protect the southern population of orcas. And then my program, which is all the entrepreneurial stuff. So the whole idea behind Maritime Blue came from Governor Inslee's office, and my boss, who was at the time the maritime sector lead for the Department of Commerce there in Washington State. And in Joshua Berger's travel, he found all these cluster organizations in places like Norway and France and Finland and Sweden. And these cluster organizations are meant to speed up innovation in a way that takes down all of these different barriers and brings in industry and academia and innovators and all these private and public sectors to really find ways to innovate. So we came back to Washington and said, this is something we need to do here. And that's how Maritime Blue started. We started as a cluster organization, and we still are. And we've become the model. There are now nine more cluster organizations in the state of Washington that are all modeled after Maritime Blue. And so our purpose is to figure out how we can take all of these different entities for the purpose of, like electrifying the ferry fleet, or building a hydrogen corridor for greener energy for the shipping industry, or providing less barriers of entry for people from underserved communities to get into the maritime industry through our workforce work. So there's a lot of different pieces to the Maritime Blue organization, but the overall goal is, how do we prop up the maritime industry in the state of Washington and really the region by all the work that we can do, which is creating jobs, creating new companies, creating new innovation, fostering innovation where innovation isn't there, and creating opportunities for people to enter into a very an industry that's not known for being very diverse. All of that work we do through a diversity lens, and it's been a lot of fun seeing the growth.
Interesting. And do you foresee in the future these nine organizations, or whatever you would call them, you know, merging into one for the state of Washington?
Yeah. So let me clarify. Yeah. So all of these organizations are under one umbrella. So it's just one organization, but we do different things. So in some cases we do operate in sort of a silo, but there are a lot of intersections. For example, when we do our accelerator, we spend a lot of time connecting our startups with interns through our workforce development programs. Mm-hmm. So they'll take on some interns during the summer. So there's a lot of intersection. Where it starts to get complicated is we're a member-based organization where we take industry, academia, innovators, both from the private and public sector. And from that membership pool, we leverage all of the things that we want to do. And so, for example, if we do a joint innovation project where we're electrifying the ferry fleet, we may partner with, the Washington Transit Authority or other entities to figure out how we make that project happen. And so what we're hopeful for, knock on wood, is that we get the Build Back Better money, and that'll enable us to really accelerate all of these projects like the hydrogen hub and, the fast foil ferry fleet in the San Juan Islands. That's going to be able to shuttle folks around. That ferry fleet is gone, long gone, and we're bringing it back. So a lot of really exciting projects on top of all the entrepreneurial work we do.
Very cool. And it's interesting because it would seem like what you're doing could be applied to other states. I mean, as you know, Oregon, California, they have a pretty big ocean next to them also. And there's a few states on the East Coast that do too, right?
Yeah. And we are having those conversations, thankfully, in October. We're bringing a lot of folks up to Seattle to have this conversation because we all get on the phone and talk. What's remarkable about the maritime industry as a whole, especially in the sector that we play in, there is a lot of collaboration. There's a lot of desire to figure out what is working in Washington and why can't it work in California? Why can't it work in Oregon? And how do we, instead of dragging the governments along, how can we just do it ourselves, right? And so thankfully, we don't have to do that in Washington. Governor Inslee, like I mentioned, made it a priority to make sure that we are growing the maritime economy here in the state and making sure we have all the resources to make that happen. That's not the same in the other states, because maybe they have other priorities or they're in an election year, whatever the case may be. And we can't wait for that. We just got to figure out how to do it. And so we have been. And even East Coast, Sea Change, Sea Ahead over in Boston, they're amazing. We spend a lot of time on the phone with them. And even our international partners, we spend a lot of time with folks like Innovation Norway, Business Finland, Palmer in France, Enterprise Singapore, Kosame in Korea. A lot of really cool, amazing opportunities to make the world smaller.
Yeah, that sounds great. I mean, I would even say, do you deal with NOAA a lot or not really?
Yeah, I mean, we have some projects that NOAA is involved in from the data side, but we spend a lot of time with EDA, a lot of three-letter agencies that are looking to figure out what we can do as an organization to accelerate innovation, to accelerate job growth, to accelerate economy. The nice thing is the Build Back Better money that was already released, through grants, through other agencies, we're starting to see the fruits of that now. We're starting to see money trickle in. We're starting to see a lot of interest from all these different agencies to figure out how we can use our mission to not only build sustainable, amazing, innovative projects, but how can we at the same time prop up the economy? So there's a lot of alignment on the federal level and the state level.
And you mentioned sustainability. I mean, it seemed to me, and you can correct me, that is a major portion of what you do. Is that correct?
I would say it's probably the primary, right? Mm-hmm. Everything that we do, all the projects we do, we're really trying to figure out how we can build solutions that have sustainability in mind. And so whether it is, when we do our entrepreneurial program, we think about what companies we can accept that have that in mind. I apologize. Now my dog's barking.
Oh yeah. It's okay. We can barely hear it.
Okay, good. So with sustainability in mind, and then, really try to prop those up. So for example, in the last cohort for our accelerator, we had a couple of solutions that were kelp-based solutions. So we had a company called Algeon out of San Diego, California, that are making alternative plastic materials using kelp. So if you can think of like toy packaging that has that plastic, they would then use that instead. Instead of plastics, they would use this kelp-based material. And then we had another kelp-based company that was making puffed snacks. So think of like little kelp Cheetos that were all different flavors called Cicharones. And just amazing. So those are the kind of things that we think about as we're taking companies into our programming, as we're building different programming, as we're doing all of our innovation work. It's not only through the lens of diversity, as I mentioned before, but how can we also be good stewards of the environment? I'm in Portland, Oregon, where it's going to be 100 degrees today. Mm-hmm. And, it's not something that is normal. Mm-hmm. We broke a record yesterday. We broke a record last year. It was 116 degrees last year, hotter than the Middle East. And that's insane. And so we have to do something. We have to turn this around. We have to find ways to do the hard work that a lot of people aren't willing to do, to find solutions to reverse the impact of climate change.
And we won't get into the political aspect of it, but you're doing the stuff that people, elected officials, just talk about and blame each other for it.
I think that's
a good way to describe it. Whether you, either side, I'm not going to get
totally political. Yeah, no, at the end of the day, I don't think it is a political issue, right? It's really, you know, everybody's impacted by it. Everybody has, it's hard to deny it anymore. It's hard to deny that the planet is getting warmer. The seas are getting warmer. And that's not a political, it's a science fact, scientific fact. So it's definitely, we don't view it as a political issue. And we certainly sit in the middle of all of that.
Yeah. So, well, it's interesting what you do for a living. I mean, through Washington Maritime, I mean, really, goes hand in hand with 1859 Ventures. Is that safe to say?
In some regards, I mean, the stuff I do at 1859 is through the diversity lens for sure. Mm-hmm. But it's a different problem to solve. Whereas, you know, with Maritime Blue, we're doing it because when you go, you know, when they think of maritime industry, they think of like they're watching Deadliest Catch, right? And there's not much diversity in that show other than the deckhands, right? All the captains are white dudes, old white dudes. And so, you know, the reality is just as true, right? When you go to a shipyard, the folks that are doing the hard, laborious work are all people of color, and the people that have higher up jobs that are high paying are not as diverse. And we want to change that, but we have to do that from being able to train people, get them exposed to things, and we have to have willing participants. That's the hardest part of this. 1859, we do the diversity work, but from a lens of that's more broad. So the thesis behind 1859 is how do we help narrow the wealth gap for underrepresented founders in the state of Oregon? So my fund, it's a small micro fund. It's an evergreen fund. We focus on four key demographics. It's women, LGBTQ, BIPOC founders, and military veterans. And that's it. I won't fund anything else, and I won't fund anything outside of Oregon. And I want to be the first check-in. I want to be the first commitment that they get. I want to be the person that they look at and can look and say, I believe in you. You're getting, here's money. Here's the resources you need to grow. Let's really change it. And I think, you know, not to get too off of on a tangent, Oregon has so many challenges. It's an 84% white state. If people think of it as a flyover state, when you come from the Bay Area to go to Seattle to go raise money, you're not stopping in Oregon to go raise money. Same thing. If you're going to Seattle, from Seattle to the Bay Area, you're not going to make a stop in Portland to raise money because there's just nothing here. So how do we change that narrative? Well, we got to build the perpetual flywheel that doesn't exist here today. We got to believe in founders in the early stages so that then when they do get an exit, they feel some small obligation to come back and give back to the community. And that's what we're building with 1859.
And are you seeing a lot of coordination with the universities there? Because Oregon has some phenomenal universities, right? I mean,
yeah. Right. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We spend a lot of time with OSU and the University of Oregon. We spend a lot of time with Portland State. We spend a lot of time really getting to know the founders that are coming out of those programs. Because to your point, the entrepreneurs that are coming out of the university system are far more diverse than, say, if I were to go to Bend or Tillamook or Newport or Ashland. And so that's usually where I'm getting a lot of interest. But that's not to say the Portland metro area doesn't have its fair share of great, amazing innovators. And so there's just a lot of really cool activity happening around here.
Very cool. So, and we'll touch on, like, since you're in Portland, your company's in somewhere in Washington, I'm assuming the Seattle area.
Yeah.
So you must work remotely, I'm assuming, right?
I do. I enjoy being able to work remotely. When we do the program, I'm up in Seattle quite frequently. I was just there last night, in fact, and so I'm there pretty frequently. It's only a 3-hour drive from Portland, so it's not a bad drive.
And have you worked remotely for years, or is this a new thing for you?
You know, it's funny. So I worked at Twilio when we were a small team. We were about 50 people
in
the Bay Area. Yeah, I grew up in the Bay Area, and I was the first remote from the HQ, from our HQ office. I was the first to convert to remote in the company, and so I've been doing remote work for a long time. What I enjoyed about it was the autonomy, the ability to just do my job and not have anybody really like bother me. What I did miss is I'm an extreme extrovert. I love getting to know people. I love talking to people. And so that's what I missed, being able to just like get up and go grab lunch with a friend. Mm-hmm. Every time I made it back to the headquarters office, there were new people I had never met who were forging really good relationships with my coworkers. So there were things I was missing out on. Mm-hmm. And when we do our work at Maritime Blue, obviously last year we couldn't be together. Mm-hmm. So our program, our second wave program, was all virtual, which was still amazing. We still did a lot of things to deliberately make the connections for founders so that they felt like they were connected. And then this year we sort of did a hybrid thing. Most of it was remote, but we had opportunities to come to Seattle and all connect. And that's where the magic happened. We watched founders of companies get together, and one company would demo what they were working on. The other one would be recording it on their phone and then texting it to some, you know, mm-hmm. potential investor or potential business partner. And that's where the magic really occurs. And I think as we're thinking about how we get out of COVID and what things we can do, you know, I think the more that we can bring people together within our programs, within all of the work we do, we're able to facilitate more of that magic that you just can't have if you're using Slack or, you know, you're doing things over Zoom. So we're trying to find, it's an experiment, right? All of this is an experiment, if we're being honest. And what we're trying to do is figure out how we, you know, be entrepreneurs ourselves, twist which knobs, you know, flip which switch that works, and sort of iterate on what works and what doesn't.
Yeah, no, and I think through COVID, I think a lot of businesses have realized that there's benefits to both the remote work, because you really do get more done. A lot of people have realized that they get more done once they adjusted. They got more done.
100%.
In the Bay Area, as you know, your commute into Twilio was not an easy commute, I would assume.
It was why we moved to Portland in the first place. I was traveling from Dublin to San Francisco on BART every day. I was miserable. I was coming home and I was miserable. I was taking it out on my family. I just was not a happy person. Mm-hmm. I loved what I did. Twilio was an amazing ride. We had a great ride. I was there from when we were 50 people to IPO. Like, there's not many people that can be on a rocket ship like that. And it was a great, great, amazing journey. But you know, the day-to-day, just getting there, coming home, it wasn't fair to my family. So when we moved to Portland, my wife remarked, you're a different person.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I can just go outside. You know, where we lived in Oregon, it felt like Lake Tahoe. We had trees everywhere. Felt like we lived in a cabin. So it was an amazing experience.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Dublin's a very nice town. I've been there numerous times, but I've also done that BART trip, and that wears you down.
It so wears you down. Yeah. We can spend all day talking about the things that frustrate me about, you know, drivers in Oregon. But that all being said, what I love about Portland and the Pacific Northwest in general is how collaborative it is. Mm. You can literally go contact somebody at some big company in either Oregon or Seattle, and they're like, yeah, let's go grab coffee. Or, hey, I have this problem. Can I just like bend your ear? And they'll do it. When I got here and I started my company, we created Coffee with Co-Founders because we love our coffee in the Pacific Northwest.
Mm-hmm.
And that meetup over the last 10 years has grown to 2,300 people. And we get 30 to 40 people come to a coffee shop and share their ideas, share their challenges. Because look, being the CEO of a company is a really lonely journey. You can't complain to your significant other. You can't complain to your co-founder. You can't complain to your employees. Your family's like, go get a day job. They have no idea what the hell you're doing. So it's really lonely. So we kind of jokingly say that coffee with co-founders is AA over coffee for founders, right? And it works. We've had founders meet there. We've had companies get funded. We've had exits from that meetup. Mm-hmm. So it works, and people need that. And I think, you know, we can spend a lot of time talking about the mental toll that being a founder takes on you. But I think having that outlet allows you to really understand and contextualize the journey you go through to be a founder, which is such a really difficult journey to go through.
Oh, no, absolutely. We literally could do multiple podcasts on just that alone, I would think.
100%. Yeah, definitely.
And just a side note, someone was asking me for some advice yesterday, some technical advice. And when he said what he needed, I said, you should just get Twilio. That's exactly what you need.
Such a great tool. I did telecom. We were talking before. I started at Pac Bell in San Mateo. I was crawling up, you know, climbing up poles, crawling under houses. And when I got to Twilio, I was about a year and a half, 2 years removed from replacing Fresno State's gigantic Fujitsu system. They had a Fujitsu system that was multiple cabinets, multiple size, you know, fridge size cabinets. And we brought it down to like one thing, one rack of telecom equipment for 5,000 phones. When I got to Twilio and Jeff Lawson went boop, boop, boop on his computer and made a phone ring, it blew my mind. I was like, wait a minute, I can write code and make a phone ring? Stop. And so I was hooked immediately. And it was so great. Side story, there used to be in the old Activision headquarters, that was Twilio's second headquarters, there was a room called the Alexander Graham Bell Room, and they had the old glass capacitors as lamps, right? You see them along train, railroad, anyway. And I looked up and the rest of the team thought I was nuts. I was the only one that knew what those things were on the lamps. And in fact, when I first got there, I was talking to Jeff about like the history of telecommunication, about how Sprint was the first really interconnects. It meant Southern Pacific Railroad Interconnect. And so it was fun to be able to take my experience of like the old world telecom and in some small part teach the new, what I call, you know, Twilio being sort of the new renaissance of telecommunications, teach them what that meant and see like instantaneously that interconnect, you know, being made, that sort of like contextual journey being made. And it was so much fun to be a part of that.
And when you look at how telecoms come, you know, over the years, and the thing that amazes me about Twilio is that the technology is one thing, but the cost they do it at, how cheaply they provide that service, that to me is the real selling.
Yeah. And it wasn't always the case. In those early days, the telcos were laughing their butts off at us. Because we would go in and some folks would call DIDs DIDs and they're like, you know, you don't even speak our language. Now there's companies like Bandwidth and Level 3 that have their own APIs now. Look at, you know, who they're copying, right? So, you know, I think they walked in thinking that Twilio was absolutely nuts. And we got very little attention in those early days to make sure that a platform and our infrastructure was redundant. I mean, we would be yelling at them. You can't allow us to go down. You have to help us. And we need redundancy. And we just, it was such an uphill battle in those early days.
Yeah. Well, and we can probably talk about this all day, but let's finish it off with, why don't you just tell where do you think Maritime Blue is going in the future?
You know, that's a great question. I think we're at an intersection right now, an inflection point. If we get this, if we get to build back better, it's going to mean we're going to be able to do so much more to facilitate all of these innovative projects that we talked about earlier. So I think we're really at an inflection point. I think the programs that we're building at Maritime Blue are really amazing. We have this new international program called One Ocean Innovation Accelerator that brings together all these international companies into one program. Traditionally, if you have an international program, you know, you go to India or you go to whatever country you're going to do this program. This one's different. We're taking Korea, Singapore, France, Finland, Norway, all these companies from different countries and running them through a program centralized in Seattle. It's a really innovative program. I'm really excited about it. It starts in September and runs through November. It's going to be the first opportunity for us to figure this out. And then hopefully we get an opportunity to do it again next year. So really cool. I think, you know, the organization itself is about 11 people. If we get Build Back Better, we'll double that size. But I think we're at a point where we're growing at a really good clip. It's sustainable. We have amazing partners. All the Maritime Blue members and supporters of the program are just remarkable and really aligned with what we're doing and are so supportive of what we're doing.
Well, good. I wish you the best. You know, you're a techie, you're an entrepreneur at heart. I always like that. And you're doing things that make the world a little bit better, right? So best of luck with that.
Thank you so much, Mark. I appreciate that.
All right. Well, Josh, have a great day. And it was wonderful talking to you today.
You too, sir.